Justin Tucker has done it for Baltimore. There are 2 seconds left on the clock.
9-11 is our time. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Very exciting Monday night football game last night. Justin Tucker with a 55-yard field goal to win it for the Ravens. That gave him a lead 45-42 with 2 seconds to go. Ravens are now 8-5. The Browns are 9-4. Wonderful game. Terrific game. Lamar Jackson left due to cramps, then came back at perfect time on a 4th-and-5, completed a 44-yard pass for a touchdown. Then the Browns went down and scored, and then left too much time on the clock. Kareem Hunt, former Chief, had a big game. Touchdown reception to tie the game. Baker Mayfield played great. Lamar Jackson was fantastic. Both teams just really, really put it out there last night. The Ravens really in a must-win situation. The Browns didn't have to win, but they were trying to keep pace with the Steelers, had an outside chance of winning the division possibly because they played the Steelers at the end of the season had they won out, but that's probably gone now as the Browns fall to the Ravens and the Browns lose 47-42. But, Dusty, I have a beef to pick with you. Not necessarily me, but I think anyone out there, it caught me in your sports, and I'm gonna try to explain this from the betting perspective.
Oh, I know about the betting perspective.
When you say, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
So why would you say meaningless safety in your sportscast, Dusty, if you're well aware of the betting landscape?
I didn't do my sportscast from the betting perspective, I guess. I did it from game was already over for the Ravens.
But it's not a meaningless safety. It is not, because the Browns were a three-point underdog, and that costs a lot of people money, Dusty. So it is not a meaningless safety. To many people that bet on the Browns to cover 3 and would have had a push.
Yeah.
And then the 15 laterals and threw the ball through the back of the end zone for a safety. So thus, it is not a meaningless safety. For anybody that bets in this area, I had fun with it today on the show. I'm like, I heard Dusty say meaningless. And yes, maybe that's true to people that don't bet. But for the many, many, many people that bet on this game last night, more than likely, they would probably pull their hair out and scream and yell at you if they heard meaningless.
Part of the reason
there is no meaningless.
I think it's actually part of the reason I said that on that way, just to see what.
To irritate the bettors are already ticked off that they lost money.
Because I just like it's your decision to do that. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual game that the Ravens and Browns were playing for themselves.
It's not meaningless, my man, when you put money on it. It is never meaningless when you bet on it. But if you don't bet on it, then it's meaningless. But that stood out to me. I'm like, I'm going to have fun with Dustin. Really.
Listen, I had fun with it, too. That's why I did it.
You did it on purpose?
Basically,
To rub in on the bettors?
Maybe I should have worded it differently, saying it was meaningless for the Ravens. But
it was meaningless for those that did not bet money on the game or something like that.
We were actually had a long discussion in our group chat about how
a horrible
it was
beat.
A bad beat. Yeah,
a really bad beat. Scott Van Pelt, it was funny. He just shook his head as he's trying to segue in, just like, wow. That's what he wanted to talk about. All right, high school sports. We got some basketball today. We got some basketball on the radio. But let's begin with the wrestling postseason situation.
Yeah, that's obviously going to be a lot different than what it normally is. Usually you have a regional tournament, a two-day regional tournament, then you go to a two-day state tournament in the postseason for wrestling, and that's changed quite a bit on what was released by the Kansas State High School Activities Association on Monday. The full look at it can be found at ncksports.com. It's a long process of reading all that, but basically what's happening is in 4A and 3-2-1A, which we would have area participants, and then in Division II girls wrestling, if we have girls wrestling in the postseason from the area, things would be a little bit different. There's actually going to be 3 rounds leading up to getting to the state tournament. So they're going to start with a district tournament at 1 of 8 sites for our area teams on Friday, February 5th, and then Saturday, February 6th, girls Friday, boys Saturday. The top 4 finishers in that each weight class in that tournament would move on then to a regional tournament. Boys would wrestle Friday, February 12th, the girls Saturday, February 13th, and there will be 4 regional sites that they will go to for that. And then the top 4 finishers from each weight class in that tournament then would move on to a sub-state tournament, which would feature just 2 sites, with girls wrestling Friday, February 19th, boys Saturday, February 20th. And then after all that's said and done at the 2 sites, the top 4 finishers would then move on to the state tournament. So that would be 8 state participants in each weight class is what it rolls down to. So quite a bit there. Again, you can read the full thing at ncksports.com, all the new changes with postseason wrestling. So obviously a lot of the area teams are going to have a little bit different look going into the postseason coming up and starting much, much earlier on February 5th with girls postseason in high school wrestling. I don't know if there's anything you want to add.
Not on wrestling. Okay. Want to shift to Wakanda USD 272 Board of Education. A motion to hold basketball competitions without spectators in attendance through January 7th. That did pass. It was taken based on recommendations from the Osmond County Health Department, the KDHE, the CDC, and many other situations, organizations. But anyway, the bottom line is that Lakeside USD Wakanda 272 will not allow fans until maybe January 8th, but definitely not through January 7th. They'll reevaluate everything come after the new year and see if they will do anything in regards to January the 8th. So that would be the first date that you could attend as a fan for Lakeside home sporting events here during the winter sports season. A reminder, their home events will be live streamed in their entirety via the USD 272 Lakeside YouTube channel. Of course, we'll have some of their games on the radio as well. But that is the decision by Lakeside. I always know when somebody is not listening to the show or listening to the station when they call when we're both on the air. I always know that. And it's like, leave a voicemail, okay? It's not that difficult. Just leave a voicemail. Nobody answers. That's why we have voicemail, and then we'll get back with you. I mean, we'll be happy to get back with you. It's just that we're not going to drop everything in the middle of the show to pick up the phone, and we are short staff because this is the staff. Dusty and I, and we are the staff here at KD Country 94. We're both on the air. Yeah, it's kind of hard to pick up the phone and call unless you want your conversation to be over the radio. We could have, you know what? That could be a new segment. We could have fun with that. Just put it, don't even tell them they're on the air. I think we're supposed to, but, you know, hey, well, how's it going? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, yeah, really? Cool. Interesting. Okay. So high school basketball tonight. Why don't you go through the schedule, then we'll hit the games that we have on the radio.
Yes, St. John's Tipton and Rock Hills on Z96.3, Bullitt at Republic County, KD Country 94 tonight. That's boys only for that one. Varsity girls will not be playing tonight. Bennington at Lakeside, same situation. No girls varsity tonight, just boys varsity at 6 o'clock. The JV girls will actually play and start. Bennington only has 6 girls that they can bring, so they're not going to play girls varsity, but they'll be JV girls, JV boys. Boys varsity starts at 6 tonight over in Downs. Victoria at Osborne tonight, Lincoln at Sylvan Lucas, Thunder Ridge at Natoma, Southern Cloud at Wakefield, and Concordia at Marysville is the schedule for tonight in our immediate area. Live video stream starts at 4:30 with JV boys today for the Bullitt Trojans as they take on Republic County, and then the varsity boys, as I mentioned, on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com at 6 o'clock tonight, and then on Z96.3 we have pregame at 4:50 and tip-off, or I guess inbound at 5 o'clock for St. John's Tipton and Rock Hills girls, and the boys game to follow coming up here tonight on Z96.3 and KDCountry94.com.
Yeah, don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on it. The Bullitt girls were expected to play. I talked with Coach Remus yesterday morning. She was excited, and the kids were excited about playing, and then about noon we found out they weren't going to play. I'd heard through the grapevine that was a possibility. So the girls are not playing tonight. Bullitt, they'll hopefully open up the season Friday at home against Ellsworth. So as Dusty said, JV boys at 4:30 and then the varsity boys at 6. We'll have both those on the video stream at ncksports.com via the Bullitt Trojan channel. The varsity boys game on the radio with pregame about 5:50, as Dusty mentioned. And I had somebody say something about, well, why do the girls not play but the boys play? Like insinuating it's not fair. Oh, my gosh. Okay, here's the thing. You play whenever you can play. You don't worry about whether the girls or the boys can play. If your team can play, you play the game. That's as simple as that. Southeast girls picked up a game against Rossville on Friday. No boys, just the girls. You're going to pick up whatever you can pick up. Like tonight, if the boys had the quarantine situation or couldn't play because Republic County boys had a situation, the girls could play, the girls should play. This has nothing got to do with girls versus boys. It was insinuated by this person. Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? Oh, my Lord. I mean, can we make things more difficult in this world? Here's an idea. You play whenever you play. So the boys are supposed to wait till everything's good on the girls' side, and then they get lined up with Republic County another date, and then guess what? There's a problem on the boys' side. Yeah. So then the girls can't play because the boys, so now we're going to date number 3. No. You don't have that flexibility because you've already had 4 games postponed for the girls for Bullitt and 3 for the or 4 for the girls and 3 for the boys. You play whenever you can play. And I've talked to both Bullitt coaches, and I've talked to coaches and administrators and athletic directors, and you know what the plan is this year? Whether it's just varsity games, whether it's just JV games, whether it's just girls games, or there's just boys games, we're playing when we can play. Yeah. Because we have no guarantee that we'll get to play another game, so we're going to play it no matter what. And that's the way you have to do it. So for anybody to make this something that it really isn't is really sad. Because you just are looking for something. You're just looking for something to complain and bellyache and bitch about. That's as simple as that. It's very simple. if you can play, you will play. And if that means, and then, well, that means that the buses, they got to take two trips. Guess what? They take two separate buses anyway, at least in Beloit's situation. So it's no different than if the girls go play next week at Republic County. It's no different. It's no, the only difference is the schedule.
Yeah.
And now in this situation, we got the both boys games in the varsity gym, and the girls go back to Republic County, let's say in January, then the, all the games will be in one gym. You won't have to bounce back and forth between gyms and this and that, an overlap with JV and varsity. So in some cases that you normally do with boys slash varsity girls, JV boys, and then varsity boys and things like that. So it's just amazing to me how people, once again, have no grasp on what's happening in this world. It's like, oh, God, this is just not normal. Well, wait till you watch the beginning of a basketball game this year, because it won't be normal, because there's no tip-off. So you can rant and rave just like I don't like it either. My part of the whole tip-off thing is I don't see what it's accomplishing. I don't understand how that is so much safer to not have a opening tip. I've heard it protects the officials. An official had it, and your nephew and his team is quarantined, and they didn't have a jump ball, and he had COVID-19, the official. So obviously that doesn't protect officials.
Yeah.
It's that. That's the part I have a problem with. I don't have a problem with changing something. I still think there'd be a better way than just awarding the visiting team automatically the ball. I think it'd be kind of fun to have a three-point contest or make it take it for the best player for the visiting team gets the shot. I don't know, something different. At least flip a coin, for crying out loud.
I mean, just do it like every other sport.
Flip a coin.
Like football, or I guess not every other sport, but football. And yeah. Volleyball did it this year.
Just flip a coin.
Had a coin flip to see who got to serve first in volleyball.
But, you know, it is, it is. And I'm going to move on. I'm not going to freak out about it. But
no.
But then to make something that really isn't there because one team plays and the other doesn't. Listen, you just play whenever you can. You might have situations this year. You have a boys team play 11 games and a girls team might play 13. You might have a situation in one school where girls play 8 games and the boys play 12. It is what it is. You're going to play as many as you possibly can. And that's what you should do. Because wasn't that the whole petition about Keisha? Let the kids play? It didn't say let the kids play, but only if there's a doubleheader.
Yeah.
You play. You play. So I have people I know that complain about not being at a game, complain about their kids not playing a full schedule. Then they get to play the full schedule. Then they complain about not being at the game. Then they're allowed to go to the game as a parent or guardian, and then they complain because the boys get to play, but the girls don't. Yeah, it's just impossible to please people. Just impossible. So anyway, moving on. Ryan, I'm head coach of the Beloit Trojan Boys. I've told my wife this recently. It might be time to find that island. I got to find Don Hyland's private island. I got to find the code to get in. I got to sneak onto his plane in the cargo bin, whatever it is. And I'm just got to go, and then maybe I just get away from people, and that's maybe where I'm going
to
live for the rest of my life.
Because
there are days where I feel
over,
that way.
So
what's that?
I said, I got to go to the next one.
You're going
to
go to the island next door? Sweet. We can wave at each other. That'd be awesome. I'm not tired of Dusty, though. He might be tired of me, but I'm not tired of Dusty. But just some people, it's just like, wow. You have no grasp on reality whatsoever. You do understand 2020's a little bit different, right? So, Ryan Isle, head coach of the Beloit Trojan Boys. They are going to be young. No seniors on the roster. Their first game of the season tonight. And he says Repco, Republic County, has size. Blake Orand is 6'4". They got a kid, the Bates kid, at 6'2". And both of them are, well, more experienced and provide some problems for Beloit inside, as Beloit's not going to be particularly big.
They've got the big kid inside. You know, he was one of their better players a year ago, and that's what they have back. And he's big and strong and can do a lot of damage in there. And that's where we're going to be lacking. You know, we're not going to be tall. We're not going to be real physical. So right away, night number one, you're playing against somebody that their strength is definitely not yours. And so for us, we're going to have to be able to control the boards. So that's going to be all year long. Rebound is going to be an issue for us. And I think Republic County always plays hard. And they know what their strength is, and so they're going to make sure that they try to get him the ball and go through him on everything.
How young is this Beloit team? No seniors. They're going to start a freshman tonight at center, and some of their top players off the bench might be freshmen. So Beloit goes from super experienced last year with 5 senior starters to, and I've warned people about this during the broadcast last year, that, you know, next year, you know, these sophomores that are now juniors are going to basically be your starting lineup, and then one of them got hurt in football, so he can't play right now. So Beloit's pretty thin, and they're very, very, very green. And, you know, Owen Islett and Caleb Burks are the only guys that really had significant playing time last year. Wyatt Brockman got a token of playing time, as did Kalen Chancellor and Jackson Rexrow, but Chancellor's out with an injury. So Beloit will be interested to see what they do their first game. They're already behind because they haven't played a game. Repco's played a couple, and they are 0-2. So that'll be interesting tonight. Pregame at 5:50 on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Live video stream, NCKSports.com, via the Blake Trojan channel. Dusty, you're going to be up in Mankato, I understand, and you're going to take you're going to watch St. John's Tipton and call the action between the Blue Jays and the Grizzlies. And Rock Hills girls coach Jamie Harvey on St. John's Tipton and trying to slow down Lauren Dubert.
They're always good. She's a very good player. We'll just have to defend well and play a good defensive game, and hopefully our offense can provide us points to stay along with them and or either take the lead.
And St. John's Tipton girls head coach Leah Bergman and her team ready for the league opener tonight.
I'm hoping that they come out ready to play and don't focus too much on what the other team can do, but just focus on what we can do and what we can control. So, and with it being a first league game, I know they'll be geared up, excited, ready to go.
And then the nightcap, by the way, the girls' varsity's at 5 o'clock. The boys' game after that, Rock Hills head coach Nick Meisner and the Blue Jays will be a challenge.
I know they got the Schmidt kid back. He's big in the middle. They got another Bates kid there, too, that can score and kind of take on what his brothers have done. So they're going to be quick. I think got the Perez boys. They're good defensively, and they're Heisman. So, we're going to have our hands full.
And Lance Bergman, head coach of the Blue Jay boys, his team, the keys to winning tonight in Mankato.
We're going to have to defend them well. We're going to have to get out on, obviously, on the when they're shooting. But the other thing is we need to attack inside. I think our advantage throughout most of the time is going to be go inside. We got to get up and down the floor a little bit better, especially on defense, get back on defense against them and make sure we get our defense set and force them to have to run the offense and compete against us defensively. And then we need to take care of the basketball.
All right, Dusty, he'll have the call on Z96.3 Lake tonight. Once again, note the time, 4:50 pregame tip-off, or as we say, play-in, throw-in, whatever you want to say now. That's going to be hard for us to get a change.
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock tonight. Quick thoughts on the games.
Girls, Rock Hill's in the same boat as the Beloit boys. It's their first games of the season, so they're going to have to find themselves and feel themselves out a little bit. St. John's Tipton played in the Morris Classic last week, so both teams have three games under their belt, so they're kind of in the flow of things. I think St. John's Tipton would probably, due to that, on both sides be the favorite, but I'm going to tell you, Rock Hill's girls are going to make some improvements this year. Lauren Welch was a sophomore, was a second-team All-League last year, and going to help lead that team, and obviously we know about St. John's Tipton and Lauren Dubert on the girls' side, and then the boys' game could be very even. I think if this game was played head up, both teams just in their first game of the season, both in their third game of the season, I think it would be a more interesting game. So I'm kind of interested to see how Rock Hills comes out, with not a real deep team, but a few guys in McDonald, Higer, and Gillett that are back from last year that had really good years for them. They do have a pretty good core, so it'll be interesting to see how that boys' game goes. I can't handicap it other than maybe give St. John's Tipton just a little bit of an advantage, because they've been out there three times. So it should be interesting to see both games and how they go tonight with Rock Hills and St. John's Tipton. Again, we'll have pregame coverage starting at 4:50 on Z96.3.
All right. Turn attention to conference title games coming up this weekend. We knew this probably could happen, and it has already happened. The Pac-12 announcing a new opponent for USC in the championship game on Monday. Yesterday, they announced this, replacing Washington with Oregon after the Huskies informed the league that it will not be able to play on Friday. The decision was made under the Pac-12's football game cancellation policy and football championship game policy due to Washington neither having the minimum 53 scholarship student-athletes available for the game nor the minimum number of scholarship student-athletes at a position group. In each case, as a result of a number of positive football student-athlete COVID-19 cases and resulting isolation of additional football student-athletes under contact tracing protocols, the league announced in an official statement. Oregon gets the nod to replace Washington as the team with the next best record. Oregon and Stanford are currently tied for second place with a 3-2 record, but the Ducks win the tiebreakers as a result of their head-to-head win in the first week of Pac-12 play against Stanford. So thus, it'll be Oregon versus USC, not Washington versus USC, in the Pac-12 title game coming up on Friday. College basketball top 25 rankings have been released. No changes. Gonzaga 1, Baylor 2, and they can't lose when they don't play, right? They both are on pauses right now due to COVID. Iowa's number 3, and they might be the best team in the country. Michigan State's 4. Kansas is at 5. Houston at 6. Villanova 7. West Virginia up to 8. Creighton 9. Tennessee 10. Texas up to 11. Texas Tech up to 14 in the rankings. Duke all the way down at 21. North Carolina at 22. Rutgers in at number 19. And Missouri is in at number 16. So, and this is interesting. I saw a comment on social media. It cracked me up. So Fort Hays State beat K-State, and one of the comments was, how did Fort Hays State beat K-State? And they said, K-State's not very good, and the Big 12 is weak. The Big 12 is weak? 5 of the 10 teams are in the top 14 in the country. number 2 Baylor, number 5 Kansas, number 8 West Virginia, Texas number 11, Texas Tech is 14, Oklahoma State's undefeated with maybe the best player in the country in Cade Cunningham. They're 6-0 and they're receiving votes. I don't know how the Big 12 is weak. Apparently nobody's watching basketball. This might be the strongest the Big 12 ever has been, to be quite honest with you. And I honestly do believe that I think West Virginia isn't going to flame out like they normally do because they're better offensive this year. I do think Texas is a better team, although I do expect them to fall off. Texas Tech, I think, is going to be really tough to deal with later in the year. Baylor is completely legit, and Kansas, of course, is legit. And then Oklahoma State, who right now, there's going to be appeals processes, this and that. They technically still could play in the NCAA tournament, by the way. It was discussed and mentioned by Fran Franchella based on all the delays due to COVID that certain stuff could be pushed off long enough to where Oklahoma State could play in the tournament. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep an eye on. So the Big 12 is loaded this year, and it's far from weak. Just because K-State lost to Fort Hays State doesn't mean K-State represents the entire Big 12.
Things aren't mutually exclusive.
No, exactly. So I saw that comment. I just shook my head. I'm like, wow, okie dokie. That's just a broad comment. K-State plays tonight at Iowa State. Yeah, Dusty's shaking his head. Me too. I'm telling you, man, different strokes for different folks. So Bruce Weber on the Big 12 opener for his inexperienced group going into Ames tonight. Cyclones 1-2, K-State's 2-4.
Can we get better defensively, you know, in a hurry? Because right now we're not very good defensively. So we'll see if they grow up and can deal with, playing in the Big 12 very early without a lot of experience and then trying to play a road game right away.
All right, K-State at Iowa State tonight at 8 o'clock. And also, we should point out that Wichita State's in action tonight, open up conference play in American Athletic Conference, as they will be at Tulsa at 6 o'clock. The Shockers are 1-2. Greg Holland is going to remain a Royal. The Royals general manager Dayton Moore wanted to bring back closer Greg Holland, and he got it done. And this Royals bullpen looks to be pretty doggone good on paper. Holland's one-year deal is worth $2.75 million and has $1.5 million available in performance bonuses. Holland, at the age of 35 last season, went 3-0, 6-for-6 in save opportunities. ERA is 1.91, and he had 10 scoreless outings to end the year. Last 13-1/3, he didn't give up a single run. So Greg Holland, along with Josh Daumont, and you think now Mike Minor might be in the bullpen, or he'll be a starter, and if there's an injury, he goes to the bullpen. Scott Barlow pitched well. Jesse Hahn looked really good late in the year. Suddenly, you start looking at this Royals team, and you go, I see what Dayton Moore is doing here. He's putting together that dominant bullpen in 14 and 15 that helped win a World Series. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. And then you get these young starters to come around, and now you got, you know, Salvi back for a full season. You've got Dozier. You've got now Santana at first. It's got pop, no doubt about it. You got Witt. You've got Aldebert and Mondesi, who came on late last year. They got good defense in the outfield. They got Soler hopefully healthy for a whole year. And it sounds like Dayton Moore is looking for more. He talked about maybe a little more pitching depth. He's looking for a left-handed outfield bat. Of course, Bubba Starling, they let him go. Not a left-handed batter, but then they re-signed him. They cleared and everything to a minor league deal. Mm-hmm. So maybe Bubba Starling will get a ninth life and come back again. I don't know. That was not a good draft pick by the Royals, obviously. They went hometown, backyard, and it didn't work out very well. And that's too bad because Bubba Starling's a great dude, but it doesn't look like he's going to have a long-term future with the Royals. So somebody said Kyle Schwarber, he's a defensive liability, so I don't know. I don't think he's going to be the guy the Royals get. But it'll be interesting to see if they do get a left-handed power bat because there is no Alex Gordon in left field. Of course, he's retired. Mm-hmm. So not that Alex was really a power bat, but he was a left-handed bat. So Dayton's making some moves, and I mean, I like it. And what if they could get Trevor Rosenthal to come back? They were talking about how they traded him and he was going to come back, and that's not done yet.
Yeah.
You bring him back for that bullpen? Holy shnikes.
Would definitely be another boost. There's no doubt about that.
Would. So we shall see how it all works out.